Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. A very good Thursday to you. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. You want to see rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. All right, let me lay out Thursday for you. As you know, Thursdays are a little bit different here. How do you know? If you're watching CBS Sports Network, you can see the old guy with the yellow tie. There he is, Mr. President, Dwight Eisenhower Ritt. We are short-staffed. So on this Thursday, like every single Thursday, there is no Alvin. You've got Ike at the controls, which means who knows what the hell is going to happen. You never know what's going to happen when that old man is pushing buttons. Hawk is in the back row. Just those two. And me. And you. Let's get it. 1-800-636-8686. Really good show. Coming up next segment, Dana White joins us, UFC president. Fist Island. Back in action this weekend. Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier. We're going to get it on. Really good fight card and a great main card. So Dana White joins me in about 20 minutes. Coming up in hour number two, Lorenzo Alexander, two-time Pro Bowl linebacker, Bills Mafia. You are one game away from the Super Bowl. One game away from the Super Bowl. Coming up in hour number three, a senior NBA writer for Yahoo, Vincent Goodwill. 1-800-636-8686. Lots to get to. Hit me up on Twitter if you don't mind, at Jim Rome. You can also email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. If you heard us at the end of the program yesterday, Adam Hawk and I talked about starting a 24-hour fast. We're into what, hour 15? Something like that. Anyway, this here is my breakfast. Coffee and water today. So yes, I am definitely hangry. Let me hit this real quick. All good. It's just 24 hours. All right, so let me start with last night's matchup between the Nets and the Cavs. They faced off in Cleveland last night, and it did mark the return of an elite guard. An elite guard who had been away from the game for a couple of weeks. Everybody was locking it in to see how he would look and how he would gel with his teammates. And after one night, the answer is amazing. Tremendous. No, I'm not talking about Kyrie Irving, who was on the floor for the Nets last night. Instead, I'm talking about Colin freaking Sexton, who had missed the last five games for the Cavaliers. And he came back like an absolute legend after missing five games with that sprained ankle. Young Bull returned to put up 42 points. He buried the Nets, 147-135 in double OT. Last night was the first time that Brooklyn's Big Three had played together. It was the first time that Kyrie took the court after his, quote, pause in the season and after the James Harden trade. It also was the Jarrett Allen revenge game. But in reality, this one was all about Colin Sexton. That was a supernova performance. Young Bull ran wild. 16 of 29 from the field. 5 of 11 from deep. He was the best player on the floor last night. And I guarantee you, nobody was thinking about saying that before last night. I'm sure there were even some people who weren't even convinced that he'd be the fourth best player on the floor last night. But there he was, on top of the heap. And he had it all working. There he was, blocking Kevin Durant on the break.
Break opportunity. Durant, long strides and taken away by Sexton. What a defensive play.
That's the Yes Network. And more importantly, that's 6'1" rejecting a 7-footer. And he was getting it done. Distributing the ball from, well, everywhere and anywhere. He found Larry Nance Jr. from deep to tie it up with less than a minute left in overtime.
Allen comes and gets it. Gives it back to Sexton once again. Calling on Irving to the bucket. Blocked by Kyrie. Sexton got it back. Nance for the tie. He knocks it down.
Cavs Network. And then the three over Kyrie to send it into double OT with less than 2 seconds left in overtime.
Sexton, his team down by three for the tie. He's got it. 1.2 to play. Colin Sexton. We are all knotted up at 127. The Nets elected not to foul, and it cost them. Sexton sticks it.
Have some. and now have some more. Because if Sexton was good in regulation and overtime, this guy was incredible in double overtime. Four threes, 15 points, including this dagger in Durant's eye.
36 overall for Sexton. Now he's got the taller Durant. Sexton lets it fly. Again! Colin Sexton is locked in!
I don't know what's better. 6'1", blocking a 7-footer, or 6'1", shooting over a 7-footer? The answer is yes. So what's happening in Cleveland right now? Hey, don't worry. I can handle that for you. I have your answer. It is a bleeping renaissance. It started with the Browns. It's continuing now with the Cavs. The Cavs picked up right where the Browns left off. The hottest city in sports right now is C-Town. I could not be any prouder. Still, there are a lot of dopes and losers and haters that are going to think that the real story from last night was the Nets and how they looked in their first game with the Big Three. Of all the possible results that people were expecting when Kyrie finally did join up with Kevin Durant and James Harden, of all the possible looks from the new-look Brooklyn Nets, I'm not sure anybody had them getting worked by the Cavaliers in double OT. Now, I'm not going to come out after only one game and say that there's no way they'll win a championship. It was only one night. It was their first game together. Irving and Harden are still working themselves into shape, but dang. If you're looking to be the best team in the East, that's not the best start. Before the game, Durant got the team together and said, quote, "Let's start something beautiful." And then they went out and they got worked by Cleveland. Yeah, I mean, there was something beautiful last night. There was. Except it was wearing black Cavaliers jerseys with ransom note font. Kyrie played a career-high 48 minutes last night. Durant played 50. Harden played 51. They went for 37, 38, and 21 respectively. They combined for 96, and that still was not enough to beat Colin Sexton and the Cavaliers. And let me be clear about this. The Cavaliers have the worst offensive rating in the NBA. The worst offensive rating in the league, and they still nearly went for a buck and a half against the Nets. Not only that, they weren't even at full strength. That wasn't even the Sexland Cavaliers. I mean, Sexton was there. Easy, Rick. Sexton was, but his running mate, the other half of Sexland, Darius Garland, was not there. In other words, this was a shorthanded Cavaliers team that dropped nearly a buck 50 on the Nets. And how were they doing it? They were doing it with moments like this. I'm not sure what anybody expected, Rit. I mean, you don't expect the Nets to look like the bad boys on Pistons or the bad boy Pistons on defense, right? I get that. I understand that. We all know this. But come on, fellas. You can't beat turnstiles. And worst of all, they couldn't get stops when they had to have them. Steve Nash said it, quote, "We had breakdowns all over the place. So we have a lot of work to do. We know we have a very offensive team right now, so we have to find ways to defend. Get connected. Be on the same page." End quote. Man, that is the truth. There were breakdowns all over the place. If you had questions about how the Nets' Big Three would show up on defense before last night, then you have even more questions right now. I mean, they weren't exactly known for locking people up defensively, and that was before the Jared Allen deal. Now that Allen is protecting the rim in Cleveland, the defense has even more questions. So, of course, these questions don't matter right this second. It's January. You don't need to be an elite defense in January. But if you want to win in June, this group better get better. You're not going to win a seven-game series with teams like the Heat or the Bucks if you can't get stops against the Cavs. I know. It's January. It's only one game. There is no doubt they can score the ball. The question is, can they get stops? And after one night, the answer is no. No, they can't. They got to figure it out. And they have to figure it out on the fly because it is a packed season. There are not that many practices. And if this team is going to live up to the hype, they have to get the stops. We know they can score it. What we don't know is if they can stop it. And if the worst shooting team in the NBA is going off like that against them, then the answer is no. They can't get stops. And if they can't get stops, there are not going to be any parades in Brooklyn. It's only one night, but pretty telling. Pretty telling. 1-800-636-8686. Other things to get to. Conor McGregor back in action. Fist Island. A Conor McGregor fight week is always amazing. A focused, motivated, in shape Conor McGregor fight week is one of the best things ever. So I've got my thoughts and a preview of that. I've got Dana White coming up in a few moments. In addition to it, I pushed out a podcast yesterday that has Leroy Butler, former Packer great, man. What a great guy. It was so awesome to get caught up with Leroy Butler. We talked about his Hall of Fame candidacy. We talked mental health. We talked about my guy, T-Buck. And, of course, we talked about the NFC Championship game and the matchup between the GOATs, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. So I'm going to have that for you a little bit later on. I need to double back and talk about the Mets. I need to own something I said yesterday about the Mets. I will do that for you shortly. Also, a tremendous crackback involving an athlete in his car. Athletes are extremely competitive. They're wired differently than you and I. They are wired to compete all day at everything from the second they wake up in the morning. But there's nothing more competitive among athletes than their whips, their cars, their rigs, their sleds. Got a really funny story there. I do want to update the Patrick Mahomes angle. Everybody is watching this, tracking this, waiting on this. Is he going to play or not? We don't know. But it seems to be trending in that direction. So I have that for you too. And although you know that this show is entirely apolitical, yesterday was a big day for a number of reasons. So I want to talk some politics. And not in a way that's going to be offensive. Well, unless you're Alex Rodriguez. So I've got that for you too. Meantime, let's check out some quick reaction. Dear Jim, I loved your beef segment yesterday, especially Jason from Oregon. I was held down while I coached in Washington and beaten in the face with a pineapple. Signed, Norv Turner.
Dude, my beef is with Washington County, dude. My freaking ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down while my freaking ex-son-in-law beat me in the face with a f***ing stick.
Well, that thing jumped today. That is aging pretty well. That sounds as good today as it did yesterday. You know what doesn't sound good? Pineapple factory smack. An explosion at a pineapple factory. And for the record, Brian and Charlotte, nobody in the history of the world has ever held anybody else down and beat them with a pineapple in the face. Nobody has ever weaponized a pineapple. This dope also wars Narc Bra, forming a citizens patrol to follow Tito Ortiz around HB and making a citizens arrest for Tito eating cheeseburgers without a mask on. That actually would be all right. We had that take earlier in the week. Tito stepping in it yet again. Tito getting into it with TK Burger because they made him wear a mask. There's your city council member right there, turning his phone around and rolling video of himself lighting TK Burger up for making him wear a mask and not letting him order without one. And then him saying, quote, "You suck." And then saying that he would not give them any more business, and neither would Huntington Beach.
TK Burger, lose my business, you lose HB's business. Suck.
That's a city council member right there. That's your local politician right there. That's the lead from the front, I'm all about constituents right there. TK Burger, you lose my business, you lose HB's business, you suck. No, Tito, you know what sucks, man? That take, that vibe, your approach, the way you lead, that sucks.
Suck.
All right, when we come back, Dana White from the island, Fist Island. That's coming up next. Hey, hit us up, 1-800-636-8686. You know, you can rain out baseball. You can rain out tennis. You can rain out golf. But the one thing you cannot rain out is life. Sometimes, no matter how hard it is, you got to get out there, right? You got to get out there in your car. You have to brave the elements, and you have to get to the people who need you. This is why you need windshield wipers that you can trust. You need wipers from Bosch. rated by Fortune as 2020's number one auto parts supplier. Bosch makes high-performance windshield wipers that can handle the harshest weather conditions, so you can reach life's most important moments. See what matters most with Bosch.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. It's Southern California. I'm Jim Rome. It is fight week. And not just fight week, but it is a McGregor fight week. So you know what that means? We're joined right now by the UFC president, friend of the program, UFC 257, Poirier McGregor 2 from Fight Island, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. It's on ESPN+. Plus. We are joined by Dana White. Dana, it's great to have you back. Dana, it is fight week. You had a card yesterday. Now you're 2 days away from UFC 257 and the return of Conor. Dana, how fired up are you for Saturday?
I'm so pumped, man. You know, we had the press conference today. It was very cordial, and everybody was very polite to each other. But I know that these fights are going to be ridiculous on Saturday.
All right, so Dana, in terms of that press conference, I saw the video. You posted the video of the stare down between Conor and Dustin. How would you describe the mood and the energy when the two of them faced off against each other a few hours back?
Yeah, great, great point. You know, it was very cordial and everything else, but the face off, the stare down, was badass. It was awesome. It was as good of a stare down as you'll ever see.
We're talking to Dana White. All right, so it's going to be a rematch, of course. Take me back. What do you remember about their first fight? What stands out to you the most about the days leading up to that and the fight itself?
Well, it was obviously a very different atmosphere. These guys were at each other's throat, you know, both guys trying to get in each other's heads. And then Conor went out and put on an unbelievable performance and knocked him out.
We are talking to Dana White. This fight's coming up on Saturday night. You know, Dana, you and I have talked so much in the past about the questions surrounding Conor's motivation, right? I mean, you pointed this out. When somebody gets a lot of money, suddenly getting hit in the face does not seem like it's as much fun. What is your sense as to where his motivation is right now, and what kind of Conor are you expecting to see Saturday night?
Yeah, no, he's a completely different kid right now. He's the old Conor. And when you're dealing with this Conor, it makes fight week really fun. And if you watch the press conference, he has this moment where somebody asks him that. So his answer to that question was, what motivates me? Highlights. He said, you know what? Money comes and goes. And what fires me up is we're still watching highlights of Mike Tyson and Ali and Roy Jones Jr. And I'm going to have so many highlights you can make a movie out of it. It's the way that he said it and the way that he laid it out was beautiful, and you can tell where his head is at right now.
So what
and
do you think?
I love it.
Yeah, Dana White joining us. Like, I've been watching hype videos. I mean, there really is nobody like this guy, especially when he's right. Like, Dana, do you think that was there some kind of switch that went off? Did he do some deep soul searching? Did something fundamentally change in him, or does he just miss being the guy?
Yeah, I think he misses. I do think he misses being the guy, and I think that when you know this business is crazy, and when you take some time off and get away from a minute, you start to crave it again, and you want that action, and you want to get back in there, and I truly do believe that the kid loves the game.
Dana White's joining us once again. So, Dana, earlier this month you had said that your relationship with Conor hit, quote, a bad place last year. How would you describe where it's at right now? How did you guys go about fixing that?
Yeah, I didn't think that it was going to be fixable, but we did. You know, we talked and we got through it, and we're in a really good place now. So I'm glad it worked out.
All right, so he had huge plans for 2020 following that win over the Cowboy, and then came the pandemic, and like the rest of the world, his 2020 did not go according to plan. What does his 2021 look like to you? Are you expecting to see him fight multiple times this year?
Well, you know, Oliveira just had that unbelievable performance against Tony Ferguson. We got Dan Hooker, who's ranked number 6, taking on Michael Chandler, who, you know, is coming into the UFC for the first time. He fought elsewhere and has had a great career, so we'll see how that plays out. And then you got Poirier versus McGregor. And now we're still talking about could Khabib possibly fight one more fight? It's, you know, this division is exciting, it's fun, and it's never been more more exciting than it is right now.
I would agree with you. I think that not only, Dana, is this division as good as it's ever been, I'm not sure that any division in the UFC has ever been as good as the 155 division is right now. What about Dustin? Getting lost in all this, right, is a really good fighter, a really dangerous fighter. How would you describe where Poirier is right now as a fighter and a person?
Yeah, it's true. I agree with you and think he's completely being overlooked by everyone, you know, but this kid's got 12 wins by knockout, 7 by submission. He's got 12 first-round finishes, and he has fought everybody, man. He beat Holloway, he beat Pettis, he beat Alvarez. I mean, you name it, this guy's fought them all.
He's had some enormous wins, and then what did he show you in that war, that win over Dan Hooker last summer?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing with Poirier. Poirier goes out and literally throws down and goes to war. I don't know if, you know, when he first got caught the first time that he fought Conor, you know, Conor went on, you know, to become Conor McGregor. So now we know how good Conor is. Now Dustin knows how good Conor is. Dustin isn't the same fighter he was last time they fought. So it's going to be. Well, listen, Conor is saying he's going to knock him out in under 60 seconds. And that would be ridiculous, except for the fact that Conor has done a lot of things he said he would do.
Well, he's done that already to this guy. But, you know, the line of thinking there, Dana, is right. The thing about Conor is that he's going to start so fast and he's so dangerous early on. But if you can weather the first two rounds, cardio and stamina are always an issue. I mean, is that literally what this fight comes down to? How do you see it playing out?
You laid it out perfectly. That's if you talk to anybody who considers themselves an expert, they will say Conor is going to come out fast and go after him like he did Cowboy. And if Poirier can get through a round and a half, Conor will start to slow down and cardio is going to become a factor.
Can't wait. Can't wait to see that. Dana, before I let you go, what about some of the other things going on? Dan Hooker and Michael Chandler also fighting Saturday. How do you see that fight going?
It's Michael Chandler's first fight. It's his debut in the UFC. You know, this kid's got 9 knockouts, 7 submissions. He's a Division I All-American wrestler. He's got 12 first-round finishes, and it's his first time in fighting in the UFC. And not only in the big show, but in the biggest show, you know, a co-main event of a Conor McGregor fight. So I'm sure he's feeling a lot of pressure, and, you know, he's going in against a guy in Hooker who is a very – very nasty guy.
Dana White joining us for a few more moments. Dana, you mentioned Khabib. So you had a meeting with him. I'm curious, what was that conversation like? And do you get the sense that he's motivated to continue fighting?
I do. I think that he still wants to fight. And, you know, he's looking at, you know, I beat all these guys. You know, what's the next challenge for me? Let's see how this thing goes this weekend. If somebody looks really good, maybe. I just feel like he decided to retire under a ton of pressure. You know, his dad just died. He didn't spend time with his family because he was in camp. He got injured and had a hard time cutting weight because of the injury. Goes in, fights the fight, and I think he made an emotional decision. So we'll see how this thing plays out this weekend. He's coming out to Vegas, and he and I are going to go to dinner. And he said, the one thing I won't do is I will never hold up the division. So if I decide that I'm not going to fight one of these guys, I'm retired and the belt can move on.
Dana White, my guest. You know, Danny, it's January now of 2021. You and I spoke a number of times throughout 2020 as you were dealing with trying to keep a professional sport going throughout a pandemic. When nobody else was trying to do that at that time, you've accomplished a ton in your career, but you said, quote, this is the number one accomplishment of my career because this is the hardest thing I've ever done, end of quote. So looking back, why did you do that? Why was that so important to you personally?
Because I felt that I could. There's three things. I felt I could do it because I knew I would spend whatever it cost to figure it out. Number two, I knew my employees would go. And number three, I knew the fighters would fight. So we just had to figure. And at the end of the day, I have this philosophy, this way of living. Listen, man, this is America. We're Americans. We've been figuring things out since the beginning of this, you know, since this country started. What we don't do is we don't quit. And we don't hide in our houses, man. We get out and we find solutions to problems.
Dana White joining us. One last thought, Dana. I'm curious. Like, you're always, man, you're just going. You're always going forward. You're always into the next thing.
Look good.
So my question is, like, what did you learn about yourself and your organization in terms of dealing with challenges and obstacles? What's the biggest takeaway after that?
Yeah, well, listen, it was hard building this business from the beginning. But going through this pandemic and just the media and the networks and the, you name it, all the people that were trying to stop us and make sure that the fight in California and then the fight in Florida didn't happen was unbelievable. And the fact that we fought through it, we ended up winning, we ended up doing it, and we ended up proving everybody wrong, was obviously a massive accomplishment. But we didn't lay off any of our employees, we didn't cut anybody's salaries, and we honored every one of our fighters' contracts. So I think as a sport, as a company, I've become so much stronger and have such a tighter relationship, not just with my employees, but with my fighters.
UFC 257, Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Poirier, McGregor 2, and a great fight card. He is the president of the UFC, Dana White. Dana, great to have you on. Good luck this weekend. I'll be watching. We all will. And it's always good to talk to you.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
You too, Dana. Appreciate it very much. Good to have you back. Poirier, McGregor 2 is going to be awesome. 1-800-636-8686. I've got thoughts myself on that fight that I will get to a little bit later on. Who do you got? Who do you like? How do you think it's going to play out? 1-800-636-8686. I want to read a long-form email before I go to break. Rome. This is actually in response to Dana White. Rome. While everyone around the country is dealing with our current public health emergency differently, I think we can all agree that our perception of time has changed quite a bit. What day is it really? So when I hear Dana White talking UFC 257, talking about the notorious one, I know that I can see real sports this Saturday. Let's be honest, these sports with COVID roster moves just aren't legitimate. I know the weenies will still claim that it's the same game, same rules, same circumstances, blah, 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 save it. But UFC 257 is still going to go all the way. The lights, the tension, the commentators, and most importantly, the fighters. We all know, making no excuses. A ton of naysayers were saying back in April that Dana would never pull off UFC Apex or Fight Island. Not only that, I hope that Dana innovates. If Conor McGregor wins by knockout with minimal damage, Dana should declare it a, quote, flawless victory and allow him to take one finish him shot at the loser who couldn't even get one clean shot in. Sincerely. Wearing cologne to a COVID test. Sleeveless hoodies, screaming, "I'll social distance your face" at a fast food employee, trying to forge a pardon, e-brake turns, and prescription toothpaste. Sign Joaquin, wore Dana White inaugurating equalizers in the UFC. He's back. Finally, where you been, Joaquin? Wearing cologne to a COVID test, sleeveless hoodies, screaming, "I'll social distance your face" at a fast food employee, trying to forge a pardon, e-brake turns, and prescription toothpaste. Does that mean you're not getting it, Joaquin? I once had to actually ask Dana White, "Hey, Dana, would you ever legalize weapons inside the cage just to get Joaquin to stop?" But obviously it didn't work if he's still warring Dana White inaugurating equalizers in the UFC. But then again, Joaquin never put it that way. He never used the word inaugurating equalizers. All right, so that's that. Top of the hour, Lorenzo Alexander. Bills, Chiefs. Chiefs. Is Patrick Mahomes going to go? We don't know yet. It's not certain, but Mahomes? It is trending in that direction. Top of hour number three, Vincent Goodwill, a senior NBA writer for Yahoo, joins us. my reset of my conversation with Leroy Butler in the NFC Championship game. Finally, Aaron Rodgers getting what he wants, a shot at that title game at home. Leroy Butler won a championship with the Slinger and the Packers. I want to set that up for you, too. All right, quick timeout. 1-800-636-8686 is the number you want to dial. Adam Hawk standing by. He's screening out your telephone calls. He and I both are screening out food until 6 p.m. We're on the clock. Here is your bottom of the hour sports update. And here is Andrew Bogish.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Sunday on CBS, a spot in Super Bowl 55 is the prize. Got the Bills taking on the Chiefs. It's the AFC Championship game, and we get you set for that game starting at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific. Notice that start time. JB and the fellas on the NFL Today, the AFC Championship game, Sunday on CBS. It's going to be a big one. Top of the hour, we're talking to Lorenzo Alexander, a two-time Pro Bowl linebacker. Get his thoughts. Bills Mafia, once again, you are one game away. One game away from the Super Bowl. So where are you at? Why can I not find you right now? 1-800-636-8686. Lots to get to. All right, a few things I want to cover right now. On Tuesday, Mets president of baseball operations, Sandy Alderson, met with the media to discuss the firing of general manager Jared Porter following the report that he had sent unsolicited and explicit text messages to a reporter in 2016. As part of ESPN's piece about Alderson's comments, he was quoted as saying, quote, "There's always a risk associated with hiring. There was no disclosure of this conduct. I don't think we would have hired Jared if we had known about that conduct beforehand. Should we have known? We did a background check. We asked if there was anything else we need to know," end of quote. So I took that quote. And then I took Alderson and the Mets to task for that, because it is simply unacceptable to say, "I don't think we would have hired Jared if we had known about the conduct beforehand." I mean, that's got to be an absolute no. There's no thinking about that. Absolutely no, we would not have. Reading that, it was messed up that Alderson would say that he thinks the team would not have hired Porter if they had known. Well, it turns out the quote itself was messed up because, in fact, Alderson corrected himself. This is what he actually did say.
"You know, there is always a risk associated with hiring. You know someone inside and out, and it's hard to know anyone inside and out today. So, you know, from our standpoint, there was no disclosure of this conduct. I don't think we would have hired Jared if we'd known about the conduct beforehand. In fact, I know we wouldn't have. And the question is, should we have known? And, you know, we did a background check. You know, we asked the question, you know, is there anything else we need to know?"
All right, so this is totally different. That's a huge detail that was not a part of the original quote that I saw. That is what I would expect from any sports organization. But that's the first time that I'm hearing about that. That additional information makes all the difference in the world. You know, when he kind of doubles back and he chases that with, in fact, I know we wouldn't have. That's different than I think that we wouldn't have. It changes everything. Like, I never would have beaten Alderson or the Mets over the head if that omission had been in the original printed quote. So I've been really tough on the Mets in the past. I'll probably be really tough on the Mets in the future. Whether that part there was a correction or the continuation of a thought, Alderson did catch it and did the right thing. So I'm going to do the right thing right now and own that I was unnecessarily harsh and I was unfair, because what I said was based on seeing the written quote that did omit a huge detail. Had I seen the entire quote, had I known the entire quote, that would not have been my take. So my take in that sense was unnecessarily harsh and unfair. And I want to own that. And I want to be accountable to that. And I want to be responsible for that. I had not seen the entire quote until right there. So for the record, that was unnecessarily harsh on my part. 1-800-636 and unfair. 1-800-636-8686. And then you've got the AFC Championship game coming up. In fact, you've got both championship games coming up. And the biggest question going into the games this weekend is the status of Patrick Mahomes. Makes sense, right? He's only the league MVP. Only the reigning Super Bowl MVP. Only the guy at the controls of the scariest and most explosive offense in football. So, of course, his status is going to be monitored like the stock market or Bitcoin, because there are millions and millions and millions riding on his status. Now, the mystery surrounding his status against the Bills, there's even more to the mystery. Like, exactly what happened to him? What happened to Mahomes? Because initially, he was put into the concussion protocol, so everybody assumed it was a blow to the head. But then there was a report that it was actually a neck injury instead. And then there was the fact that he had a hard time standing up, but then he jogged off into the locker room. And then in addition to all that, there is a toe injury that he also suffered. So as a result, people are trying to figure out exactly what's going on, and they're scrutinizing the injury report more than ever before. Understandably, right? It's a completely different game if Chad Henne is playing instead of Patrick Mahomes. Like, I don't know, maybe it's a bad analogy, but a meal... I probably shouldn't do that. We're in a fast. A meal is a completely different meal if you fire up a grill and you throw some dog food on it instead of a sirloin. Yeah, I know how many weapons that there are in that offense, just like I know how good Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy are. And I know what Chad Henne did in the fourth quarter against Cleveland. But even the most diehard KC fan could not tell you they feel as confident in Henne as they do Mahomes. Of course. This is why it was significant that Kansas City initially announced that Mahomes had been a full participant in practice yesterday. That sounds good. It sounds promising. But then they changed his entry to limited in the practice. Mike Garofalo of the NFL Network said yesterday's practice was, quote, a glorified walkthrough. So if it were a full practice, he would have been limited. Andy Reid used the same word himself.
Yeah, so he looked good. He's just he's in the protocol, so there's only certain things he can do, and it's a limited basis. But he took all the snaps, and he feels good. So I mean, we're just going to follow this protocol.
Right. So once again, the key words here: protocol and limited. And according to reports, that's pretty much as it should be. Like, you shouldn't read too much into the fact that the practice was a glorified walkthrough, because most practices this time of year are glorified walkthroughs. Coaches and teams do not want their guys going full bore the week of the conference championship game. So the fact that it's, quote, a glorified walkthrough really is not a change that the team is making for Mahomes. It probably would have been a glorified walkthrough anyway. Him taking all of the snaps may or may not be a good thing or a bad thing as it relates to Sunday either. You know, and then you've got the concussion protocol itself. It's something we hear about all the time, but suddenly everybody is an expert on the protocol. According to the Washington Post, the NFL bolstered its protocol for the 2018 season to require a concussion evaluation, quote, for all players demonstrating gross motor instability, e.g. stumbling or falling to the ground when trying to stand, to determine the cause of the instability, end quote. Boy, that's a hell of a line, isn't it? Gross motor instability. I think I had that last Friday night. But I was in my backyard. Gross motor instability. Hey, what do I know? I'm no wordsmith, but it sure seems like Patrick Mahomes had, quote, gross motor instability when he tried to stand up and was wobbling around. And then you've got the question of the protocol itself and how one advances through the protocol to return to the field. And here's the key piece. Everybody involved makes it very, very clear it's not the team's decision. It's not up to the player. It's not up to the team, nor should it be, because I guarantee if it were, Mahomes would have been right back out there. He would have gone right back out there, even with that gross motor instability. You know why? He's tough as hell, and because almost every player would go right back out there. That's why they don't leave it up to the player. That's why they don't leave it up to the team. The protocol is a five-step process. Quickly, here's the breakdown from the Post. The first phase involves rest and limited activities until the player can progress under the supervision of the athletic training staff to light aerobic exercise. Phase two involves increased cardiovascular exercise. The third phase allows for practice with the team in football-specific exercise for 30 minutes or fewer with careful monitoring. The player can participate in non-contact football activities in phase four. And the final phase involves being cleared medically for full on-field participation and contact. Listen, I know why they do that. I know why they lay it out like that. I feel like I need to be in protocol just reading it. But I know why they do it. After the player is cleared by the team physician, he must then be examined and separately cleared by an independent neurological consultant jointly approved by the league and the NFL Players Association and not affiliated with any NFL team. So there you have it. In other words, Patrick Mahomes has to work his way through all of that this week. Those are the phases that he needs to work through. The question then is, how long does that take? Can you do that in a week? If so, then he's going to go out there with, quote, limited practice and probably doesn't matter a hell of a lot. He is Patrick Mahomes. But if he runs out of time and the clock hits zero, then Kansas City's got to go into the biggest game of the season with Chad Henne under center. And I don't care how much faith you have in those weapons and that coach and his play calling and the coordinator. There's no KC fan that wants that. Not against a really dangerous Bills team. Hell, even Ariel Helwani does not want that. So we'll see what happens. When we come back, Lorenzo Alexander joins me. That's the top of hour number two. Do not go anywhere.